Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, hump day, May 18th. Hope you're doing well. As far as I'm concerned, it's got to be a great day. No day can go poorly that begins with peanut butter Captain Crunch and my wife coming home with a score last night of the PBCC. Must have been on sale at Kroger. I can thank whoever marked those prices down. Anyway, great to be with you. On top of that, even better, God's mercy and grace are new every day. The same grace that flowed forth there at Calvary continues to redound throughout the ages, ever present. And today, everywhere the Mass is celebrated at that holy altar, that grace actuated and made present. God's great gift of himself to us in the person of his son, Jesus Christ. And so whatever's going on in your life, and believe me, depending on the day and depending on the circumstance, there could be a lot, and some of it good and some of it not so much. But the permanent reality is that God's mercy is ever directed and oriented toward us. And that, in fact, is good news. Got a great show ahead for you today. In my second, my friend Amberlee Windisch, Catholic physician, urologist. She's going to be here on the program. We'll talk about some various issues related to the medical field and the Catholic faith and hear a little bit of her story of how she became Catholic to begin with. I'll bring this up again next hour, but I still recall the first time I met Amberlee Windisch. I got a phone call in my office with the Catholic Diocese. It's my full-time work. I'm the director of family life and evangelization. And she was married to a Catholic. She was a Methodist, contemplating the possibility of becoming Catholic, but tripping over some issues, as not surprising. Anyway, she called me up because someone had given her my name as being a former Methodist as well, and thought maybe I'd be worth talking to. So that's how we first met, and I ended up giving her a copy in the midst of our conversations of Pope St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body. She asked for it. I didn't give it to her as homework, but she took it as such. I even offered to give her a more simplified version, a more popularized version of this great teaching of Pope St. John Paul II, which is pretty dense philosophically. It is not an easy read by any means, but Amberlee didn't want any condensed treatments. She wanted the straight deal. So I gave her that, and it had a pretty transforming effect on the way she came to understand the Catholic faith. So we'll talk about all that in the next hour, and be a good conversation, I'm sure. Other things I want to talk about today. I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment, and it's going to guide all my bumper music today. Also, we'll talk about an important lesson from StoryCorps, that project of going around and hearing people's stories, recording people's stories around the country. Also, high praise for our new papal nuncio. What is a nuncio, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. I'll fill you in on that. Also, the humility of limited vision and our unconscious degradation of the lay vocation. In other words, all of us who are not clergy. So all that on the program today. Can't take your calls today. Our phones are down. We're transitioning providers, evidently. So, but if you want to shoot me an email, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a response on Facebook or a thought on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. Last night, went to my daughter's last official choir, high school choir concert. It was, oh my goodness, bittersweet, probably more on the sad than on the sweet. Watching her grow up, all of my daughters, this is our now, by God's grace, Sunday will be our fourth daughter to graduate from Lexington Catholic High School, our local Catholic high school. I've been really thankful, particularly for the influence of the choir program, the choral program, on their life and on their, they've really found a community there. It's not a huge high school, but they've really found a family within a family in the choral program. The directors there have been tremendous, and there really is a sense of family. Not only that, but my girls have learned a lot about music, and music is such a gift. It really is to have, and they've come to appreciate. They know so much more than I do. And I, you know, I went through high school band and have been a music lover, but I mean, they were taking music theory and all sorts of things. And it's really a pleasure to see their love of beauty, I think, because, you know, there is an aspect of the Catholic faith that goes beyond academics. It goes beyond an intellectual experience. It is an encounter with beauty. The Catholic faith is beautiful in its integration, in its panoramic glory. It really is. And music taps into a certain, I think, part of our personality that goes beyond intellect and draws us into the mystery of the holy. And again, not to get too deep on you, but particularly thankful for that as my daughter wraps up her high school career. And we're still working on the house, by the way. The painting has commenced anew now that the floors have been redone. So hopefully by the time we have this reception on Sunday, we'll probably let everybody else enjoy it while my wife and I go back and take a long nap. Again, if you want to chime in, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can respond on Facebook or on Twitter. We're continuing to walk through the letter of St. James today. We're in James chapter 4. We've been talking about these virtues for living in the world, which here, as we're on the other side of the Feast of Pentecost, in many ways, it's interesting that after Pentecost, of course, the gospel reading that we encountered was Peter, James, and John coming down from the mountain. This was on Monday, of course. So we've had these 50 days, just as the original disciples had had that season of enjoying the presence of the risen Lord, his teaching, his conversation, the glory of his risen reality. Then, of course, they had the 10 days after he ascended to the Father and as they prayerfully awaited the gift of the Spirit. And then there at Pentecost in the upper room in Jerusalem, the mystery of the third person of the Blessed Trinity poured forth there, blowing in like wind, flames of fire, all the rest. We've been in the midst of that season in the church. Easter's the longest season of all the seasons because our faith is an Easter faith. Even though, yes, we walk through our Lenten journeys and we walk through our Advent journeys of preparation, but ultimately, the faith is an Easter faith. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. And we're to live in that joy. But there also comes a time in the liturgical year where after the glories of the Easter season, we enter into what is ordinary time. Now, because Christ has transformed everything he's touched, nothing is ordinary in the sense that we imagine. But when we say ordinary time, I do think we do partly mean this ongoing life of discipleship, that as long as our Lord tarries and as long as we have breath in our bodies, that we live in the world. And so it's very instructive that after the glories of Pentecost, the gospel reading for Monday was, as Jesus came down from the mountain with Peter, James, and John. We're down the mountain from the Easter season, and now we're down here where the rest of us live. This would be very instructive for Peter, James, and John as well. It's been noted many times by Christian thinkers throughout the ages, both Protestant and Catholic, by the way, that the mountaintop is wonderful, but we don't live there. And that the purpose of the mountaintop is to strengthen our faith so that we can descend down into the valley of difficulty and challenge and be radiant witnesses to what we've seen and now what we know interiorly. And so we get into the book of James, the letter of James, on basically how to live that out now that we've come down from the mountain. And so Monday's reading was about humility and wisdom. Yesterday's reading was about dealing with our passions which put us at war not only with each other, but even war inside ourselves. And James dealing again with pride yesterday and how God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble, how we need to resist the devil who continually tempts us, as he did the original couple in the garden, with the desire to somehow be God ourselves or to grasp for those things which are not ours to have, but rather to live a life of open-handed trust. And then we get into today's reading, which is a simple instruction encouraging us toward a humility regarding our own plans. James chapter 4, 13 through 17. Beloved, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we shall go into such and such a town, spend a year there doing business and make a profit. You have no idea what your life will be like tomorrow, James says. You're a puff of smoke that appears briefly and then disappears. Instead, you should say, if the Lord wills it, we shall live to do this or that. Good friend of mine I graduated high school with, I teach with at our local Catholic high school. His wife, this weekend, died suddenly, 50 years old, completely unexpected. You have no idea what your life will be tomorrow, like tomorrow, James says. If the Lord wills it, we shall live to do this or that. Don't take today for granted. God grant eternal rest to my friend Bobby's wife, Sheila, and give all of us the humility to understand our lives are in your hands, not presume anything. We'll be back in a minute, maybe. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. The sweet sounds of George Strait there, Amarillo by Morning. Leave that up just a second there, Ethan. All right. Man, just settle into a little King George this morning. If you don't like George Strait, you're not going to like today's show, because it is his birthday today. And we have to honor King George on his 64th birthday, the man who has had more number one hits of any music genre than any other artist. You may not have known that, George Strait. So my question of the day is, what is your favorite George Strait song? Now, that's pretty, if you're a George Strait fan, and if you're not, then you've got problems. Anyway, what is your favorite? It's so hard to narrow it down. I mean, the guy's had over 50 number one hits in his career. And this one, Amarillo by Morning, which always is a particularly high favorite, never reached number one, believe it or not. And it's considered by some to be one of the great country music songs, certainly in the top 10 of all time. So anyway, give us our phones aren't working. We're transitioning providers. But you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. You can also text me if you want on my own personal cell phone, 859-619-8440. 859-619-8440 if you want to text me. Oh, we can still text the bread box. Thanks, Ethan. Yeah, so 573-4-BREAD-4, you can still text that number, even though you can't call it. 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want your response in there. I was doing a little reading last night about George Strait. George Strait, who retired from touring, I guess, a couple of years ago. He's 64, as I said now. A pretty remarkable life. He's, I think, a fairly famously private person. And I came to discover why in reading the Wikipedia piece about him last night. Of course, grew up in Texas, as you might imagine. In 2009, broke Conway Twitty's previous record for the most number one hits. Counting all music charts, Strait has amassed a total of 60 number one hits, breaking a record also previously set by Conway Twitty and giving him more number one songs than any other artist in any genre of music. Born in Poteet, Texas, a couple of interesting things. He eloped, by the way, with his wife Norma when he was 19 years old. And they're still married to this day, almost 45 years later. Reading about his early career as an artist and some of the frustration that came in with him trying to make it. After several unsuccessful trips to Nashville, it says, in search of a record deal, in which Strait was turned down by every label in town, he considered giving up music altogether. He was offered a job designing cattle pens, that's P-E-N-S, by the way, and decided to take it. He gave the band notice that he was leaving, but after a discussion with his wife, she convinced him to give music one more year. Not long afterward, MCA signed Strait to a recording. He won when Strait was 25 years old. When he was 28 years old. The initial deal was for one song. If the single did well, the label would then consider doing an album. Well, MCA turned out to be a pretty smart move, I guess. Also, one thing that I didn't realize was that George Strait and his wife, back in 1986, were struck with tragedy. Their 13-year-old daughter, Jennifer, killed in a one-car, non-alcohol-related accident, riding in a Ford Mustang driven by Gregory Wilson Allen, age 18, of Staples, Texas. He was charged with a Class A misdemeanor for vehicular homicide. Their daughter was partially ejected from the car, causing her to die upon impact. The incident caused Strait to greatly limit his contact with the media, and he stopped doing interviews for many years because he did not wish to discuss Jennifer's death. Wow. So in the midst of the starched shirts and the bootcut jeans, the Texas troubadour was a man dealing with grief. And I'm sure now 30 years later, since the death of his daughter, still grieving, because a parent losing a child, you never get over that. So anyway, I love George Strait. And what's not to love? I mean, married 45 years to his wife, a grieving husband and father. And somebody who has the ability. I think this, to me, is the mark of a great artist, is when you can put all the accoutrements aside, all the flash, you know, all the decorations. You can walk out on the stage, just yourself, maybe a single microphone and a guitar, and you can mesmerize a crowd. I think that's true for a comedian, somebody like, granted, recent revelations notwithstanding, Bill Cosby, who could walk out with a chair and a mic and hold an audience for an hour. George Strait, the same sort of ability, not on flash, but just on substance. So if you want to text us, 573-4BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Happy birthday, King George. A big win for the Cavaliers. If anybody thought their several-day layoff while they were waiting for the Raptors' Heat series to conclude would harm them, my goodness, out with a 31-point home victory over the Raptors, and Kyrie Irving looking like the Tonto to King James Lone Ranger. Impressive for the Cavaliers. And this whole NBA season may end up very differently than people imagined. I noticed that on 538.com, my favorite stat geek website, they're projecting NBA predictions as of yesterday. And now they're actually have listed Oklahoma City as the favorite to win the NBA championship and to win the West after their game one shocking win in Golden State. And Golden State now in a must-win situation in game two. And but look out for the Cavaliers. They seem to be, if Tyronn Lue can lead them to an NBA title, then boy, that firing, which was roundly criticized of David Platt at the time, the Cavaliers coach, who only took them to the finals last year, was fired midseason. If Tyronn Lue can take them to the championship, that firing is going to look like a bold move that paid off. And speaking of Cleveland, their baseball team put another hammering on my Cincinnati. Man, the Cincinnati Reds. They looked like they were going to be maybe a pleasant surprise early in the year. Lost the first game 15-6 of the series with the Indians, and then last night 13-1. Now, that's rough. That's like when my old church softball team, back when I was a Methodist pastor, we would play. Of course, we were a small congregation, you know, 150 people on a Sunday morning. We had an 80-year-old for a time playing in right field. Okay. And we went up against the, I think, the C team from the large Protestant megachurch in town. A team that we affectionately called the Flat Bellies because they were all like 23, 24, 25-year-old guys with flat bellies. And I remember we played them one time and actually rallied to tie the game so that it would go into another inning past the time limit. That was a big mistake because we actually, I think, gave up 10 runs in the next inning before we'd gotten an out until finally we literally threw in the towel and said, that's it, we quit. We couldn't get them out. So anyway, that's kind of the Reds right now. Let's give our What Were You Thinking awards for the day. We've got a few nominees, so see what we can pull up as we span the globe. Let's see. I know I had. Oh, here we go. We'll start here with a woman who followed her GPS. Now, GPS is a great thing, especially if you're somebody like my wife, Angie, who is seriously directionally challenged. I've still got a little bit too much male ego in me about taking directions. But GPS is a good thing. But anyway, according to this story, this is from Canada. Police say following the instructions from a GPS on a foggy night led an Ontario woman to drive right into Lake Huron. There's a picture here of her submerged vehicle. Now, in her defense, it was a foggy night. She was following a route on her car's GPS while driving in the dark. But she made a wrong turn with dramatic consequences. So be careful following your GPS. You may just end up in the drink. Number two, we're going to give to four firefighters charged with submitting false reports to 911. These are four volunteer firefighters. And the reason is because they enjoyed the thrill of riding in the fire truck. This Logan Township PA, four gentlemen, Dustin, Eric, Daniel, and Edward, charged with calling 911 to report false alarms just so they could ride in the fire truck. Really? Oh, gosh. Anyway, we've got another one when we come back that you're really going to like. And it all has to do with evangelization. And maybe there's some sort of a hidden lesson in it for us. We'll be back in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Baby, run, cut a path across the blue skies. Straight in a straight line, you can't get here fast enough. Buy the truck and fire it up. Lean on the gas and off the clutch. Leave Dallas in the dust. I need you in a rush. So baby, run.
29 minutes before the hour. Gonna have to indulge me today. I'm just warning you. George Strait songs. It's his birthday. King George, 64 years old. A guy who single-handedly rescued country music from modernizing influences in the early 80s and brought back a more traditional sound, real country. Now, who's going to be that guy today? Chris Stapleton, maybe? To rescue us from the Florida-Georgia line and the Sam Hunts of the world? Anyway, George Strait did it once. He's retired now. He can't be expected to do it again. But my question of the day, what is your favorite George Strait song? The Texas Troubadours had over 50 number one hits. May be hard to narrow it down. But if you want to give it a shot, you can text me at 573-4BREAD-4. Can't call. We're in transition with our phones in terms of providers. But you can still text us. 573-4BREAD-4. Is the number 573-4BREAD-4. You can post your response on Facebook or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. That's my favorite right there that you just heard, Run. He's got a lot of great ones, but consistently Run. And I see Run listed usually among the favorites of George Strait's anthology. Great song. Man, lean on the gas and off the clutch. Anyway, so give us a shout. Back to our What Were You Thinking nominees after our second one of our firefighters who called in false alarms on 911 just because they enjoyed riding in the truck. Reminds me of that old Seinfeld episode where Kramer was on the back of the ladder because he always wanted to ride the ladder truck. Anyway, let's see here. We've got one that has to do with a... let's see, the U.S. Supreme Court, this according to the Detroit Free Press, the U.S. Supreme Court has opted to stay quiet on a local free speech case, marking a victory for a group of evangelical Christians who marched to Dearborn. Of course, Dearborn, Michigan, known for its significant population of Muslims. I think it is the predominant faith there in Dearborn, Michigan. Anyway, that marking a victory for a group of evangelical Christians who marched around Dearborn with a pig's head on a pole while telling Muslims they would burn in hell at a festival 5 years ago. A federal appeals court had previously ruled in favor of the demonstrators, concluding the members' speech was protected activity. They were marching around Dearborn amidst a lot of Muslim American people with a pig's head on a pole telling them they would burn in hell. Now, there are a whole host of different strategies out there for evangelization. Some believe in servant evangelization, simply serving their neighbors and the people in their community in such a way and with such a winsome joy and humility that it might prompt them to be interested in the faith. There are others who take a more apologetic approach to explain the faith. I'm not sure pig head on a pole is anywhere in the preferred methods of evangelization. Really? We're going to give the award today to these evangelicals who thought they would win over Muslims by carrying around a pig's head on a pole. Is there really anything more to add? My goodness. Anyway, if you've got your own, send it my way, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post it on Twitter or whatever. You know, I don't think anybody is quite that egregious in their attempts to evangelize, which, by the way, is a word that its root means good news. How is pig head on a pole and you're going to burn in hell perceived as good news? That's a good question. Somewhat related to that, yesterday at the Vatican, Thomas Rorsica, who is, I think he's a priest from here in the U.S., and he's a consultant with the Vatican on issues related to public relations and living in the world. He works with SALT, the Salt and Light Media Ministry. He evidently warned that Catholic blogs create a cesspool of hatred. This was in Brooklyn, New York. As it says, although this piece here from the Catholic News Service, although Pope Francis has succeeded in rebranding the public profile of the Church, according to a Vatican PR aide, his positive tone isn't always reflected when Catholics themselves take to the use of social media. On the contrary, to hear Father Thomas Rorska tell it, sometimes Catholic conversation online is more culture of death than culture of life. Many of my non-Christian and non-believing friends have remarked to me that we Catholics have turned the internet into a cesspool of hatred, venom, and vitriol, all in the name of defending the faith, he said. The character assassination on the internet by those claiming to be Catholic and Christian has turned it into a graveyard of corpses strewn all around. Oftentimes, the obsessed, scrupulous, self-appointed, nostalgia-hankering virtual guardians of faith or of liturgical practices are very disturbed, broken, and angry individuals who never found a platform or pulpit in real life and so resort to the internet and become trolling pontiffs and holy executioners. Now, that is a paragraph, folks. Tell us how you really feel, Father Rorsica. The obsessed, scrupulous, self-appointed, nostalgia-hankering, virtual guardians of faith. You know, there is some truth in what he's saying here. And, you know, to a degree, I've got to probably put forth my own mea culpa. There are some, I think, finer points of argument regarding the Catholic faith and Catholic practice that are not best suited to social media. Because I do think Father Rorsica's point is, I mean, these are the concerns that can be shared in certain circles, but when they become public and people see our wrangling online over things that in their mind seem petty and insignificant. I'm not saying they are petty and insignificant, but to a world that is largely unconverted, it's kind of like talking about war numbers, wins above replacement numbers, a baseball statistic with people who aren't interested in the game of baseball, and passionate arguments about the designated hitter. You want to win somebody to the game of baseball, don't have those kind of arguments in front of them. Talk to them about the beauty of the game and share with them the joy that you find in the game. So hear me clearly. I'm not saying there's not a place for those sorts of arguments and discussions. I'm just not sure social media is the place to do it. And believe me, I'm offering my own mea maxima culpa in this regard. You know, I chimed in on Facebook the other day. I've tried to do better. Sometimes I look back, honestly, I'll be honest with you. I look back at some of my posts from 3 or 4 years ago on various topics, or maybe when I first got on Facebook. I'm a very passionate person about ideas. Just am. It's always been my nature. And part of what drew me to the Catholic Church was the beauty of truth and the integration of the faith. And that's an important thing, and the great intellectual tradition of the Church is one of the rich treasures that we have. But that's not the totality of the faith. And we really have to weigh how we come across to those who are on the fringes of the faith or are not familiar with the faith. So when I got on Facebook early on, it felt like this is the public square and my chance to argue for the faith. I saw some cartoon of not too long ago of a woman calling from the bedroom, "Honey, come on to bed." And the man sitting there saying, "I can't come. Someone's wrong on the internet." Okay. And I look back at some of the things that I wrote about various things. Not that I disagree with the points that I was making, but maybe just the tone of it. And I cringe a little bit now at it. And I had been doing a better job until this most recent situation with the Department of Justice, Department of Education directive to schools about bathroom use and genders. And I kind of went off a little bit, and a friend of mine kind of confronted me, checked me on it, and said, you know, how is this being perceived by those out there who maybe feel alienated from the church? Maybe this is not the best venue. Well, further reflection, he's probably right. And we may not be carrying a pig's head around. Sometimes we contribute to the cesspool of hatred. More on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. Back on the Mike Allen Show. Happy birthday to King George, George Strait. More number one hits of any musical genre than anybody in history. And my question of the day relates to George Strait. What's your favorite George Strait song? Maybe hard to narrow it down. The Chair, when they're one of his number ones, usually gets a mention by many. You can text us, 573-4BREAD-4. Can't call, unfortunately, today. We're in transition with our phone providers. But you can text at 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Let's see what we've gotten on Facebook so far. Brent says, just give it away. That's a great song. One of his more recent hits. Eric says The Chair, which we just played. Oscar, Baby Blue. Oh, yeah. See, there's so many good ones, I can't play them all for bumpers today. Elizabeth says all of them. All in all caps, period, of them. And Patrick says Amarillo by Morning. That's on my personal page. Let me see what's on the... I know some people responded as well. Well, I'll share the ones that are on the show's Facebook page. I did get an email from Fred, who's been on an emailing roll lately. He said, George Strait dash put me into the straight jacket. I'm assuming that means that, Fred, you're not a George Strait fan. Would that be a fair assumption? How can you not like George Strait? Seriously. 573-4BREAD-4. Text me or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. So George Strait, born on this day all the way back in 1952. But there have to be some other things throughout history that have happened on this day. What are they? So let's take a stroll back through history with Rufus and his time machine.
Where are we, dude?
These are the circuits of history, gentlemen. They'll take us to any point in time we wish.
But where are we?
Gentlemen, we're history.
Don't know much about history. So on this day in 332 AD, way back before my time, Constantine the Great announced free distributions of food to the citizens in Constantinople. Now maybe you accuse him of using that old political strategy of bread and circuses, but I don't know, maybe Constantine's conversion was more real than he's sometimes been given credit for. 1096, the First Crusade, around 800 Jews massacred in Worms, Germany. Now, I'm going to be interviewing later today, and I'll play the interview for you tomorrow with Rodney Stark, who's written an excellent book. He himself, not Catholic, but it's called Bearing False Witness, and it's about defending so many of the anti-Catholic viewpoints that have prevailed in our culture for a long time. And Stark, who's a sociologist, also a historian, one of his first chapters, he deals with the charge that the Catholic Church basically is almost solely responsible for deeply ingrained anti-Semitism. You see these kind of stories, this 800 Jews massacred. It's easy to believe that, but he tempers that somewhat. So I'm going to talk to him about that. 1804 on this day, Napoleon named Emperor of the French by the Senate. What could possibly go wrong, right? Yesterday we talked about the anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. On this day in 1896, the Supreme Court decision that Brown overturned, Plessy versus Ferguson. Just goes to show you the Supreme Court does not have the charism of infallibility. 1897, Frank Capra born on this day. Director, of course. He did nothing else in his life, and he did plenty. It's a Wonderful Life, a great gift to the cinematic library of greatness. 1920 on this day, happy birthday, Pope St. John Paul II. Born, I think, in, is it Wadowice, which I'm sure butchers the Polish, would go on to become one of the, if not the most consequential man of the 20th century. On this day in 1946, Reggie Jackson born, Mr. October, 70 years old today. I still remember that great World Series he had back in 1977, three home runs leading the Yankees to World Series glory. And also one other on this day, 1970, Tina Fey born. Tina Fey, who is hoping against hope that Sarah Palin will be Donald Trump's running mate. Not that I think it'll happen, but Tina Fey, like I said, there are times now when I watch Sarah Palin where I think she's imitating Tina Fey, imitating Sarah Palin. Funny, funny lady for sure. And then happy anniversary to Buffalo's former Buffalo's Bill quarterback Jim Kelly and his wife Jill. They've been through a whole lot. They were married at a Catholic church in suburban Buffalo back in 1996, 20 years ago. They've been through so much. The son born with Krabbe's disease, who died much too young, and then Jim has his own battles with cancer. He's kept a remarkable faith through it all. Anyway, back to this point of Father Thomas Rorsica and Catholics and cesspools of hatred on the internet and Catholic bloggers. And something similar to that yesterday was an article by Sister Teresa Alethea Noble, who she's been on the program before. I hope to get her on again, maybe even to talk about this article. She talks about Lady Gaga and the online Eucharist police. She says, since when did Christianity become more about preaching than the rules than preaching the gospel of mercy? We talked about this earlier in the week, the story of Lady Gaga, who, of course, was raised Catholic, although sometimes among entertainers' famous last words, and yet she posted a photo of herself with her priest, and after Mass, she was, I think, holding a missalette, it looked like, or a Bible one, and talking about what a meaningful homily he had about the Eucharist being the medicine of mercy. And it provoked a lot of reaction, predictable reaction on the internet, and particularly from those who a priest friend of mine accuses of being having what's called competitive orthodoxy. You see, you know, when I became Catholic, having been in a mainline Protestant denomination where there were culture wars, in a sense, within the denomination. And we see that going on in the United Methodist Church now in their every 4 years general conference, battling over these cultural, moral issues, sexual issues. I was not surprised then when I became Catholic at those who strayed from Catholic teaching on the left, let's just say, to use limited American political terminology. But those who dissent from Catholic teaching, who we might call liberal Catholics, I was fully prepared, I think, to face that. What I don't think I was really prepared for was those who venture out on the right, who become more Catholic than the Pope, who find themselves in danger of sliding off the bark of Peter, which is an analogy or a metaphor for the church, bark meaning boat. Peter, of course, St. Peter. As it's been said, you can fall off the bark of Peter from the right and from the left. And in some ways, I think those on the right can be even more dangerous because they cloak their furor in a robe of righteousness. And it's a very, very dangerous place to be. As my priest friend calls it, competitive orthodoxy. And therefore, everybody is scrutinized and everybody comes under the gaze of their standards. Now, is there a place for standards? Of course, we believe very firmly that to come and to receive the Eucharist in a state of willful, unrepented, grave sin is a spiritually dangerous proposition. You are eating and drinking judgment upon yourself. And so love does not preclude a gentle confrontation. Sometimes the wounds of a friend are sweet when we have the courage to confront each other. And there is a place for that. But some of the stuff, as Father Rorsic had mentioned, and as Sister Teresa Alethea Noble calls out in her blog with the online Eucharist police, instead of seeing persons as souls who may be far from perfect, but yet on their way deeper into a full conversion, rather than react with online Molotov cocktails, to understand, as Sister Teresa Noble says, to understand the value of graduality in the spiritual life, not graduality of the law, but graduality in the comprehension of the law. As she says, this is a reality in all our lives. We do not come to an understanding of God's law simply by reading the sounds of the black and white text. It takes a whole lifetime for us to comprehend spiritual things in a way that goes beyond intellectual comprehension and really sinks deep into our hearts. So this reaction to, well, has Lady Gaga repented? Has she been to confession? How do you know whether she has been or not? We sometimes think we know these people. We have no idea what's going on in their heart. We see ourselves as defenders of the church. Let me tell you something. I remember a Protestant preacher once asked if, you know, he needed to defend the Bible. He said, you don't walk before a lion with a sword. You can say the same thing about the church. The church doesn't need our defending. Christ will defend his church. Our call is to share his grace and mercy. We'll be back with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.